This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 7th of February 2020. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 7th of February 2020, which this week have been edited by Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Norma York.
Hello.
And John Parvin.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. The main headlines this week: 4 men killed in road crashes. Henry's making history with EYT, and newsreader resigns over error of judgment. So, Nikki, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Which was the 4 men killed in road crashes. 4 people have been killed in separate crashes within 4 days on roads in the Winchester district. On Thursday, January the 30th, the A272 Telegraph Hill near Chesfoot Head was closed for hours as police carried out investigations in the first of the fatal collisions. Officers were called just before 12:30 p.m. to the stretch of road following a crash involving a black Ford Fiesta and a white Audi. The 2 men travelling in the Fiesta were pronounced dead at the scene. Their identities have not yet been released. A 60-year-old man who was driving the Audi suffered serious injuries and was taken to hospital. Officers investigating the exact circumstances of the collision are keen to speak with any witnesses. A police spokesman said, "Did you witness the collision? Maybe you have a dash cam and captured footage of either of the vehicles in the area in the moments before or after the collision." The second of the 2 incidents took place on Sunday at around 4:30 p.m. Emergency services were called to the B3035 Corhampton Lane near Corhampton. Officers say a Ford Fiesta Z-Tech and an Indian FTR motorcycle and an MV Agusta were involved in the collision. The rider of the Indian motorcycle, a man in his 50s, and the rider of the MV Agusta, a man in his 60s, died at the scene. Both men's next of kin have been informed and are being supported by specialist officers. The driver of the Ford Fiesta, a 17-year-old boy from West Meon, was arrested on suspicion of causing death by dangerous driving and causing death by driving without due care and consideration while over the specified drug limit. The teenager has since been released from custody while investigations into the circumstances surrounding the crash continue. Inspector Andy Tester from Rhodes Policing Unit said, "We are appealing for witnesses to this collision, which has resulted in the death of 2 men." Following the fatal crash on Sunday, fellow motorbiker Damien Hill of Lower Basingwell Street, Bishop's Waltham, has raised concerns about a stretch of road and calling for more to be done. The stretch of road, actually. Mr. Hill said he reported the bend where the incident is believed to have taken place regarding a rut in the centre of the westbound carriageway. He said, "With this rut, it makes you take a line across it, which brings you very close to the central white line. If oncoming traffic is cutting the bend on very close to the central white line, it is highly dangerous." Inquests are expected to be opened into the deaths in the coming weeks.
Henry's making history with EYT. Encore Youth Theatre, EYT, is making history with this year's highly anticipated musical theatre production. For the first time, it's being choreographed by a male dancer. Henry Morris grew up in Winchester and appeared in 7 EYT shows, starting with the chorus and finishing as one of their leading actors. He said, "It's incredible to be back with Encore, working with this group of insanely talented young people. Creatively, it's been fascinating to take my experience in contemporary dance and to apply it to a musical. All the cast are eager to be pushed and are taking every step in their stride. The show, Hot Mikado, will be at the Theatre Royal Winchester from February the 20th to February the 22nd. Noel Jones, Artistic Director of EYT, said, "It's been unbelievably brilliant having Henry back as part of the artistic team. there could not be a better example to our young male members. And there are 8 pictures, which I am not even going to attempt to describe, only to say that there are a lot of very talented young men, and there's only 4 young ladies. So it's mostly men, and they look most entertaining.
Newsreader resigns over error of judgment. A national TV presenter who lives in Hampshire has resigned from ITN after errors of judgment on social media. Alistair Stewart, who lives in Bramdean near Alresford, was the longest-serving male newsreader, starting his career in Southampton with Southern Television in 1976. But last week his Twitter account appeared blank, and he said in a statement, "It was a misjudgment which I regret, but it has been a privilege to bring the news to households throughout the UK for the past 40 years. ITN said Mr. Stewart, who is also a patron of Naomi House Hospice in Sutton Scotney, had breached editorial guidelines, but did not elaborate on the reasons for his departure. The company's chief executive, Anna Mallett, added, "We would like to recognise Alistair's contribution as one of the UK's foremost journalists and TV presenters, and to thank him for his commitment to delivering high-quality broadcast news over many years." It stems from an exchange on Twitter in which Mr. Stewart, quoting Shakespeare, used the word ape when another person, Martin Shapland, was black. In recent years, the 67-year-old was best recognised as the lead presenter of ITN News. Michael Jeremy, Director of News and Current Affairs at ITV, said Alistair has been a long-standing familiar figure to viewers of ITV News, both reporting and presenting with distinction. We wish him the very best for the future. National newspapers reported that Mr. Stewart offered to apologise to Mr. Shapland, but channel bosses told him an apology would be insufficient to save his job. Mr. Shapland has since said he regrets Mr. Stewart's resignation and would have been satisfied with an apology. Mr. Stewart was one of the last journalists to interview Lord Mountbatten before he was assassinated by the IRA in 1979. Naomi House and Jack's Place, a charity of which Mr. Stewart is patron, has stood by the compassionate and generous newsreader. Chief Executive Mark Smith said, "As Alistair himself states, he may have made an error of judgment. However, the Alistair we know is kind, compassionate, and generous to a fault. We remain indebted to him for all he has done for our charity over many years of tireless service."
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death announcements, then Christian comment, letters, historical items, Chronicle comment, first person, and Belgarum. And then we'll have announcements and what's on. So we start with the death announcements this week. Airy, Gwen Olivia Airy, née Meacher, died at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital after a short illness, aged 92. Bundy, Jenny Bundy, but there's no details of date of death or age. Carter, Marion Dorothy Carter, died on the 21st of January in Winchester Hospital, aged 76. Clark, Joyce Doreen Clark, died peacefully on the 14th of January, aged 93. Clark, the Reverend John Charles Clark, died on the 21st of January. Denahay, David Patrick Denahay, died peacefully at home on the 25th of January. Forbes, Kim Forbes, née Hannah, on the 19th of January at Southampton General Hospital, aged 53. Lusmore, Brian Leslie Lusmore, died at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on the 26th of January. Reynolds, Joan Audrey Reynolds, died suddenly on the 24th of January, aged 92. Ricketts, Beryl Gladys Ricketts, died peacefully in Flowerdown Nursing Home, aged 88. And Smith, Daphne Elsie Smith died peacefully on the 27th of January, aged 93. Now, John, I think you've got a Christian comment, please.
Why go to church? My name is Reverend Christopher, and I am rector of the Upper Itchen Benefice. You may know us better as Tichborne, Cheriton, Beauworth, Kilmerston, Hinton Ampner, and Bramdean, with Church in the Woods. Thank you for reading my article. I feel blessed to have been asked to contribute this week. When I talk with my neighbours in our village shop or local pubs, often they will say they don't go to church. Sometimes it's because they work or play sport or have family commitments, or they just prefer a nice lay-in on a Sunday morning. Rarely is it because they don't believe in something. Spirituality is universal to the human condition. When we are sensitive to our limitations, a deep yearning within us arises, a hunger to see what lies beyond, out of our sensorial reach. As natural as breathing is our reaching out for relationships towards something awesome enough to worship. But why go to church? Well, good question. I don't go to church because I'm perfect and want a reward. I don't go to church to boast about my prayerfulness or charity. I don't even go to church to recharge my battery with singing and sacrament. No, I go to church because I want to nurture my desire to reach beyond who I am. I go to church because I feel I need to feel my deep hunger for something I do not know. I go to church not because I'm good, but because I want to be good. And church is the place to find help. Help from God, help from Scripture, help from other people. Not self-help, but spirit help. Yes, God is more gracious and generous than our religious taboos describe. Yes, God works outside the church. Yes, where charity and love, there is God. But I am fallen, broken, fractured. Too much so to live without his gift of the church. Without regularly hearing and pondering Scripture, without regularly receiving the nourishment of his body and blood, I would be alone, numb, and incapable of being whom God is calling me to be. That is why I go to church. To be the glory of God, which is a human being fully alive. I work and occasionally play sport. I have family commitments and definitely enjoy a long lie-in. Sometimes I don't want to yearn for eternal truth. Sometimes I want to look away from the stars and watch the telly, and that's fine. God is with me on the sofa, just as much as he is with me on my knees in church. God will come to us, but if we never go to him, we'll miss out on knowing him as our host, and we'll deny ourselves the magnificent banquet of mercies he has prepared for each of us. Thank you for reading my article. God richly bless you. Amen. That's from the Reverend Christopher Durrant, Rector of the Upper Itchen Benefice.
Thank you. Now we have letters to the editor. I think, Nikki, you've got the first.
From Karen and Noel McCleary, headed More United. Sir, as committed Brexiteers, we were proud to fly the Union Jack from the front of our house last weekend in celebration of leaving the European Union. We would like to thank our Remain friends and neighbours for their indulgent smiles and for resisting the temptation to say something derogatory. Similarly, we would like to thank the many Brexiteer friends and neighbours who texted, emailed, phoned, wrote and popped around to say thank you for flying the flag. It made me realise once again that we the British have more that unites us than divides us. Namely, the capability of reasoned debate in a secure democracy, a sense of humour, a sense of community, and especially a wonderful tolerance. These attributes are what will even up the rocky future path ahead as we forge a new future for our great nation. Karen and Noel McCleary, Hook Pit Farm Lane, Kingsworthy, Winchester.
And I've got another about Brexit. Post-Brexit, from Chris Polak. Sir, I write on Brexit Day while the UK as a whole voted to leave the EU. It's important to remember that Winchester did not. Special arrangements will therefore need to be made. The situation is complicated by the fact that while certain areas of Winchester were strongly Remain, other areas actually voted to leave. In order to achieve harmony locally, the following measures will be introduced. There will be no sanctions for continuing to eat croissants in areas of town such as Fulford and the bit between the bottom of town and the motorway. Does it have a name? Where there are lots of big posh houses. In areas which voted to leave, people would be expected to breakfast on bacon butties or their vegan equivalent, although it's been shown that most vegans, except those who have fallen on hard times, actually live in Remain areas, so this may not be an issue. Residents transiting between leave and remain parts of town will be asked to adapt as they move, swapping from consumption of soft, smelly cheeses and fine wines to fish and chips and mead. Winchester residents who own properties on what is now the cut-off part of Europe, the continent, will not be expected to give them up, but as of now, holiday homes should be purchased within the UK. Yes, OK, it's very rainy and miserable at times, but you will still be allowed to go on package holidays. Remain voters will be able to afford upmarket packages, while leavers will continue to select cheaper holidays. This will mean that, as now, they are as unlikely to mix when abroad as they are when they are in Winchester. Thanks in advance for your cooperation. And that was from Chris Polak from High Street, Hyde, Winchester, and I think with his tongue in cheek.
In a similar vein, this one is headed Now in Control. Sir, so we've taken back control and got it done. Good riddance to straight bananas and French farmers. We're free. But at what cost? Where is the benefit of beggaring our neighbours? What do we gain by leaving one of the most successful economic unions in history? Where is the legacy in unravelling the fellowship that grew out of the devastation of two world wars? How misguided was the flag-waving that would have dismayed Churchill and even Thatcher? Absence doesn't make the heart grow fonder. It just makes it absent. And that's from Councillor Kim A. Gottlieb, St Michael's Ward, East Stratton.
And this from L.J. White, headed Why So Long? Sir, just a quick comment on last Monday's train derailment at Eastleigh. 50 years ago, a very similar derailment occurred at exactly the same place, but involved a passenger train. We as a family decided to have a meal out on Sunday, May the 5th, 1969, at Salisbury, taking the train via Chandlesford, as this was to be the station's final day of passenger services, at least for many years. On reaching Eastleigh Station that afternoon, we were greeted by the sight of a locomotive and its first coach at the end of the platform 3, now 2, somewhat out of alignment. Once on the opposite platform, it was seen to be derailed, and obviously very recently. Despite this, we went to Salisbury and returned, I think via Southampton, but with little disruption, a few hours later. The local recovery teams were on site getting it sorted. I do not recall too much disruption on the Monday, and certainly not for a week. But then, of course, Eastleigh was largely self-sufficient for men and equipment to deal with such things. One observation, passing the station last Wednesday, was that the innocent containers on the wagons derailed were still on site, so almost certainly missed the boat. Why weren't they transferred to other wagons and sent on their way as soon as a crane was available? And this from L.J. White, Sparrow Square, Eastleigh.
Museum charges. Sir, it was reported in the Chronicle last week that two of the city's museums will be charging for entry, adding up the figures suggesting that visitors might be paying a total of £11 for three attractions. Adding the cathedral, a visit to Winchester starts to look rather expensive. Surely there should be a less expensive inclusive ticket. This would attract the visits to both the Great Hall and the City Museum, with the West Gate included when it's open. The footfall would certainly improve. It would be wonderful to include the cathedral in a combined ticket, but this is highly unlikely to be possible. The report tells us that the extra income will be funding staffing and then a new programme events, etc. Surely the emphasis should be the other way round. The priority is too redolent of such government statements. While planning Winchester as a focus of visits, more needs to be done to encourage coach drop-offs at the top of the High Street, outside Elizabeth Court in Sussex Street, so that visitors can enjoy a gentle downhill one-way walking route, taking in the city attractions and the cathedral, and finally finishing up with their pick-ups in the Broadway. And that was from Peter Innes, Nations Hill, Headbourne Worthy.
Back to Brexit again, I'm afraid. Free at last. Sir, to paraphrase Dr. King, we had a dream. It just took over 40 years for it to come true. But here we are, free from the unelected, bureaucratic, growth-depleting shackles of the EU. Save for a short transition period. So, has Armageddon arrived? Do we have mass unemployment? Have the pound and stock markets collapsed? What do you think? Even the leading doomsters, Osborne, Hammond, Carney, the CBI, et al., now realise how wrong they were. It is just a shame that the country had to endure over 3 years of acrimony and pain just because, as their predictions of chaos, if we did not join the euro or voted leave proved to be wrong, some people were not prepared to see the potential of a self-governing UK. In my first letter on the matter to this publication, I suggested, admittedly somewhat tongue-in-cheek, that those who loved the EU so much could emigrate, leaving the rest of us to get on with it. That option still remains for them, of course, but I would urge them to remove the blue and gold tinted glasses and take a clear look at the EU. With the Commission demanding ever more integration and centralisation, the bloc is becoming fractured and getting worse by the day. Germany, the economic powerhouse, has been in decline for over 2 years and sits on the brink of a recession. Eurozone unemployment is twice that of the UK, whilst huge youth unemployment, particularly in the southern states, looks unfixable. The euro, most deliberately designed to support the German export economy, has imprisoned the southern states, who are fiscally incapable of being competitive. I would say to all those who voted Remain, accept the reality, stop fighting and get on board the UK Express towards a better, brighter, economically dynamic and, most importantly, self-governing future. Everyone is welcome. And this is from Ray Green of Alexandra Terrace.
Now we're going to step back in time and do historical items, and we're starting 100 years ago from Nikki.
Saturday, February the 7th, 1920. A meeting in support of the nationalisation of the coal mines was held at the Oddfellows Hall in Winchester on Monday evening. The speaker, Mr. Fred Bramley, said that by the end of the month there would have been 100 demonstrations held in various parts of the country in support of the idea of the nationalisation of the coal mines. The attendance at these demonstrations so far had an average of 2,000. And a second item, there was a large attendance at the weekly meeting of the Winchester branch of the Workers' Educational Association. The lecturer said that he proposed to devote the whole evening to Chartism and the Chartists. It was a curious fact that either the Chartists were rather overlooked in the history books, or else they were purposely treated with contempt.
And 50 years ago, Saturday, January the 7th, 1970, a metropolitan area of South Hampshire served by a two-tier system of government is proposed in the White Paper on Reform of Local Government published on Wednesday. It would include the two large cities of Southampton and Portsmouth, the Isle of Wight, and the stretch north to include the boroughs and rural districts of Romsey, Andover and Winchester, the rural district of Droxford, and the urban and rural districts of Petersfield. The Redcliffe Maud Royal Commission had proposed two large unitary areas, Southampton and South Hampshire, and Portsmouth and South East Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. The White Papers favoured combination of these two areas to form a metropolitan similar to those proposed for Merseyside, Lancashire and Cheshire and the West Midlands. The government says South Hampshire presents a special problem. The area contains two major towns which are growing towards each other physically and in other ways.
25 years ago, February the 3rd, 1995, exuberant Twyford Downs protesters claimed a belated vindication on Monday as the Hampshire Chief Constable delivered courtroom apologies worth over £50,000. Winchester County Court was packed with well-wishers to witness the successful outcome of 10 protesters' lawsuits against Hampshire Police for wrongful arrest. One of the 10, David Abbott, a doctor of Kingsmere Meadows, Shawford, commented, "Justice has now been done for some of those who were illegally arrested. Reparation for the infringement of civil liberties has been paid and an apology has been made. When the civil liberties of one Englishman or woman are trampled on, all of us are threatened." But emphasising the pyrrhic nature of the protesters' victory, he added, "However, it will not be possible to repair the damage which the government and its contractors have inflicted on this beautiful and historic part of England. It has been desecrated for all time." The damages awarded total £53,350, with Hampshire Police Authority footing the bill. Trains from Winchester to Waterloo are becoming increasingly unreliable, say commuters. Their complaints come in the week when it became clear that services on the Waterloo, Southampton and Bournemouth routes could suffer if privatisation goes ahead. And John Denham, the Southampton Itchen Labour MP, called on people in the South to rise up and support Labour's campaign against rail privatisation. David Chidgey, the Eastleigh Liberal Democrat MP, said that this was clearly a political statement, not an operational plan. Off-peak intercity trains in the southwest seem likely to be casualties of privatisation under the minimum service standards for the private operators outlined by the Secretary of State for Transport, Dr. Brian Mawhinney. Operators will be required to provide typically 80 to 90% of existing service levels overall, Mr. Dewinney made clear at a press conference on Tuesday. Only two trains per hour instead of the present three will be required on the Waterloo-Southampton service.
Thank you. Now we have editorial comment, please, Nikki.
Headed "Ludicrous Treatment of Alistair Stewart." "And so a distinguished career ends in seeming ignominy. Alistair Stewart, who lives in Bramdean, has resigned from his newscaster role at ITN, a company he has served for nearly 40 years after moving to London from working in local TV in Southampton. The cause has been a spat on social media that has been blown out of all proportion. As our columnist and close friend of Mr. Stewart, Khalid Aziz, says in his comment on page 23, the incident says more about ITN's ridiculous management than it does for someone without a racist bone in their body. Racism is something of which Mr. Aziz has personal experience. Mr. Stewart has lived locally for years, and it would be more than difficult to find anyone to say a bad word against him. His tireless work for charity is well known, and Naomi House Hospice at Sutton Scotney were quick to offer him their support. Unfortunately, we are living in an era where exchanges over social media can have such devastating consequences. One can only hope that somehow a way can be found for Mr. Stewart to return to ITN."
Thank you. Now we have first person, please, on a similar theme, I think.
Yes, and Khalid Aziz, as was stated, writes this. "Racism? What racism?" Well, the sky hasn't fallen in. Just about a week ago, the Remainers marched. Nigel Farage held his firework-free, non-alcoholic, allegedly, celebratory party. On the stroke of midnight last Thursday, ironically European midnight rather than GMT, After 47 years, we left the EU, and it's been a bit like the period after Chamberlain announced that Britain was at war with Germany. Not much happened. But we shouldn't be fooled by this phony period. There are deals to do before we make the final departure at the end of this year. It seems financial services and fish are first up for negotiation. Quite why, apart from the asinine alliteration, I can't really fathom. It seems a bit asymmetric. I hope fishermen do well, if only with the selfish thought that those of us not living on the coast might see an improvement in our dismal supermarket fish counters. Still, as I say, the sky has yet to fall in. Sadly, that cannot be said for my friend Alistair Stewart, veteran of the broadcasting world and upstanding Hampshire citizen. If you've been in a cave for the last week, you won't know that his infelicitous quotation from Shakespeare's Measure for Measure, including the word ape, has cost him his job. He was having a social media spat with an individual who turned out to be black and who delighted in making offence, taking offence and complaining to ITN. He made other complaints too, but those didn't result in sackings. When Jeremy Paxson left BBC, he fired a few darts of home truths at what he described as the children now in charge of editorial process. As the media is now so popular with top graduates, it tends to recruit their uber-intelligent types, who, though intellectual, often lack the judgment and annealed by actually doing the job of hands-on journalism. Counting mourners at funerals, or in the case of Alistair, reporting from a body strewn war zones. Rather, such rarefied types drop straight into management positions without sullying their dainty hands and soon become experts in posturing politics of broadcasting. For the record, Alistair doesn't have a racist bone in his body, and I know about racism. Racism is what my father experienced when in 1954 he completed his commission as an officer in the Royal Pakistan Navy. He brought his undoubted intellect and qualifications, 3 first-class honours degree, courtesy of the Royal Navy Engineering College at Plymouth, to seek employment in post-war Civvy Street. "You're too qualified to be put in charge of white men," said repeated prospective employers. "Personally, I've nothing against you, but I have to think of others, you see." And that appears to be just what the spineless and pusillanimous management of ITN were obviously thinking as they bullied Alistair into standing down, adding in the usual bromide statement, the weasel words beloved of all shifty managements, "We wish him well." They clearly didn't. They clearly thought that they were riding the current woke zeitgeist, which allows anyone to confect outrage out of nothing. Well, they were wrong, as evidence has by the reaction to date. An online petition calling for reinstatement looks like to reach over 100,000 signatures and still counting. There have been myriad colleagues writing powerful articles in Alistair's defence. Management in broadcasting is often venal, easily and disproportionately rattled by critical complaint from the Green Ink Brigade. When I arrived as main news presenter at Television South in 1982, there was serious consternation when a handful of viewers suggested they would prefer a white face bringing them their news. In the end, my then management, proper time served journalists, made the right decision. Sadly, today, ITN's bosses lack the two attributes which would have stopped them making fools of themselves and trashing the career of the broadcasting's finest, moral fibre and judgment.
Thank you. Now we have an article from Bel Garum, I think, the alternative look at the news. John.
Indeed. An alternative look at the news. Winchester beaten by Fareham. The best place to live in Britain for 2020, according to Halifax, is East Hertfordshire. Fareham, yes, Fareham comes second. Winchester has slipped down to 34th. Its decline is something of a mystery. Its strengths are still there, and its weaknesses are common to lots of places. East Hertfordshire includes market towns such as Bishop Stortford and Hertford, and was given the title after scoring well on several factors. These include strong exam results, high life expectancy, excellent health and happiness scores, and high average earnings. Sarah Broughton of buying agent Prime Purchase said it's not surprising that East Hertfordshire tops the chart as the best place to live. The countryside is unspoilt with attractive villages, good footpaths, and some excellent pubs. There are good schools and easy accessibility to London if that's what you need, but yet it is still rural. Bishop Stortford in particular is attractive and vibrant, and the easy commute to London makes it a great place for families to live.
Thank you. Now we have this week's What's On. And we've got a couple of items. The Mayflower at Southampton has got Mamma Mia the Musical running from the 11th to the 29th of February at 7:30pm with matinees on Thursday and Saturday. So if you want details of tickets for the Mayflower, you can phone their box office on 02380 711 811. That's 02380 711 811. At Salisbury Playhouse, there's a play on Lorca's Blood Wedding, and that's on till the 22nd of February. Again, it's on at 7:30 in the evening with matinees Thursday and Saturday. It's a classic love tragedy, but it's been set in a modern Wiltshire village. And for tickets and more information on Blood Wedding at Salisbury Playhouse, telephone the box office, 01722 320 333. That's 01722 320 333. And finally, for you, the aged rockers amongst us, the Anvil Basingstoke on Saturday the 15th of February at 7:45pm is hosting a 60-year anniversary performance by Joe Brown. Wasn't that Joe Brown of the Brothers? He's singing gospel, country, bluegrass and rock and roll. So if you're a fan of Joe Brown, he's still going. Well, he is at the moment and hopefully will be on the 15th of February at the Anvil at Basingstoke. You can telephone 01256 844 244. That's 01256 844 244. Now, lighting up time ends Friday the 7th of February at 7:33am and begins at 5:06pm. And next Wednesday, the 12th of February, it ends at 7:25am and begins at 5:15pm. And if you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. And Mary's phone number also appears on the tag attached to your memory stick. And now we continue with further items of general news. Nikki.
Weather warning. Strong winds are set to batter Winchester this weekend as the Met Office issues nationwide weather warnings. On both Saturday and Sunday, winds are predicted, in the worst case, to reach as high as 60 miles an hour. Nearby, 80 miles an hour gusts are expected to hit exposed coastal areas. The warning read, heavy rain would be an additional hazard, especially over the western hills. Winds of this strength across a wide area have the potential to produce disruption to transport along with some coastal impacts, especially in the west. My comment, have a good weekend.
Yes.
Busiest year for air ambulance. Hampshire and Isle of Wight air ambulance respond to nearly 60% more incidents in 2019 than in the previous year. Hampshire and the Isle of Wight Air Ambulance, H-I-O-W-A-A, that's catchy, responded to 2,262 call-outs in 2019 compared to 1,429 in 2018, an increase of 58%. The life-saving charity ended the decade with their busiest year on record, having experienced their busiest month ever in July 2019 when they responded to 244 calls. the charity has revealed that of the 2,262 incidents they responded to in 2019, the largest number were cardiac arrests, accounting for 28%, 640, of all the call-outs. Road traffic accidents account for a total of 17%, 388. HIOWAA Chief Executive Alex Lochran said, in 2019, we increased our paramedic and doctor numbers and expanded our fleet of critical care team vehicles. As a result, we are now able to reach more patients than ever before in need of our advanced medical care. This has only been possible thanks to the ongoing generosity and unflinching support from members of all our communities in Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. HIOWAA began operations in July 2007 and in November 2019 flew their 9,000th mission. To donate or find out other ways to support the charity, visit www.hiowaa.org.
Starry-eyed species. If you think it's tough to impress your other half, wait until you hear about these starry-eyed species. With Valentine's Day around the corner, we'd just like to share some of the beautiful and bizarre ways our local wildlife says, I love you. Heartbeats. The snipe is a winter visitor, usually to be found on wet grassland and marshes. During the breeding season, it makes a distinctive drumming sound to attract a mate, which can also be heard as the male performs an aerial courtship display. The snipe does not drum against an object or make the sound by calling. It's actually the result of its tail feathers vibrating in the wind. Dance off for dominance. During the mating season, the male adder will dance for dominance. Although it is often mistaken for a courtship ritual, this dance is a show of strength that typically occurs between two or more males. It's known as the dance of the adders, and it's easy to see why. The intricate interlacing, twisting and rolling as they wrestle is almost hypnotic. Tough love. In early spring, you may spot hares batting at one each other with furious furry fists. While this strange ritual may look like a hostile feud, it is actually a precursor to courtship. The pugilists are usually the females, who fend off amorous male admirers by boxing with them. It is also thought that female hares use this technique to test the strength of their prospective partner before deciding whether to choose him as a mate. Dressed to impress. The common cuttlefish is a ghostly predator that drifts silently beneath the surface of our local seas. It can quickly change colour to merge into its background, which helps it ambush prey and attract potential mates. During mating season, males put on a vibrant colour show to attract females, passing pulses of colour rapidly along their bodies.
And from me, we're going to have jail for threats. A Winchester man has been jailed for a series of offences, including threatening behaviour, harassment and driving offences. Paul Marks Midlars, I'm going to spell that, M-Y-D-L-A-R-Z, 64, was jailed for 24 weeks at Basingstoke Magistrates Court. Midlars, of Maytree Close Badger Farm, has denied the offences but changed his pleas at the later stage. He admitted harassing Ivor Whitfield at a property on Nuns Walk, Abbots Barton, on June the 10th. Midlars also harassed Catherine Midlars between May the 1st and July the 23rd by sending her letters, and also harassed Sally Shaughnessy between July the 1st and August the 7th by sending her letters and also writing, "Loose lips sink ships in it," on her doorway. He admitted threatening behaviour to PC Patrick Fleming on June the 21st and must pay the officer £50 compensation. He also admitted the same offence against Caroline Pont on July the 4th. On July the 16th last year, Midlars rode a Honda motorcycle without insurance and failed to give a specimen of blood to the police after being stopped for an offence on Hatherley Road full flood. A ban from driving for 12 months was also imposed. Magistrates said the offences showed persistent behaviour causing substantial distress.
75k grant to help rough sleepers. A huge grant has been given to Winchester City Council to boost its efforts to reduce rough sleeping in the district. The authority was awarded £75,000 of the National 112 million Rough Sleeping Initiative Fund for the coming year. The money has been welcomed by the Council's Cabinet Member for Housing and Asset Management, Kelsey Learney, in the wake of the authority's ambitious goal to end rough sleeping in the district by 2023. Councillor Learney said, "I'm delighted the City Council have received £75,000 of the additional government funding, which will allow us to expand the good work we are already doing with our partners to reduce the rough sleeping in Winchester District." Excuse me. The Council said it would use the money to build on its existing programmes to offer support for those living on the district's streets. These include additional funding for the complex needs navigators, and Councillor Learney added they will engage with those who are entrenched in their rough sleeping, helping them to access health systems and counselling, with the end goal of securing accommodation and preventing repeat homelessness. A further £28,000 will be used by the Council's outreach service to help people access appropriate housing. This could be used to purchase items which are currently stopping individuals from being able to achieve their goals: a passport to gain employment, a deposit to secure accommodation, for example. This will support the City Council aim of no second night out, avoiding a temporary problem becoming a lifestyle, Councillor Learney said. It specifically set out four priorities: provide early prevention and support to prevent homelessness, promote systems change through partnership arrangements, ensuring sufficient supply of accommodation, provide the right support and services so that no person needs to sleep rough in Winchester. Across Hampshire, Southampton City Council is one set to receive the highest amount of money, with £915,120. It is followed by councils in the New Forest of £221,600, Basingstoke and Deane £1,099,850, and Fareham and Gosport of £141,450, and Test Valley of £103,224. I'm sorry, that's an awful lot of money to talk about. The news was announced on Tuesday, and the Homelessness Minister, Luke Hall, said there are people all over the country working tirelessly to improve the lives of the most vulnerable of our society. Our Rough Sleeping Initiative is proving to be successful, and this funding will mean the vital work can be continued as we set out to end rough sleeping once and for all.
Report on City Trade shows there is hope for the High Street. Winchester Business Improvement District's annual barometer report on City Centre Trade has been published, and it's not all bad news. The report is based on feedback from 60 BID members, made up of 32 national chains and 28 independent stores. Around 39% of city retailers performed exceptionally, with sales increasing at least 5% in 2019. Last year, the proportion was 28%. Around 37% of businesses expect to increase their levels of profitability in 2020. Director of the BID, Paul Spencer, said, "The latest report indicates that Winchester's retail performance is good, given the economic and technological pressures affecting the sector, and retailers produced much better results in 2019 than in 2018. The report adds, "It's not always bad news in Winchester. 15% of businesses report a confidence score of at least plus 8, compared to only 10% at the start of 2019. On a scale of 1 to 10, the median Christmas trade expectation score was 8, one higher than last year. However, 25% of retailers reported declines in takings of at least 5%. The vacancy rate in the city centre has also risen to 6.9%, 0.7% higher than last year. This is still lower than the national average of 10%. Mr. Spencer added, "Our research highlights that there are businesses in the city reporting disappointing results, but there is hope and we can learn from those in the city which are performing well. Nearly two-thirds of retailers are either neutral or not sure about the impact Brexit will have on their businesses, and 27% are negative about Brexit's impact. Although the report does not include any information on internet purchases locally, the Office for National Statistics says that the proportion of online sales to total sales in November 2019 was 21.5%, just an 18% increase compared to 2006. The full report can be seen on the BID's website.
And one more Brexit thing. Remainers gather to hold vigil as Britain leaves the EU. On the day the UK left the European Union, a group gathered in Winchester to highlight that it's better to light a candle than to curse the darkness. Around 70 people met at the Buttercross on Friday evening, just hours before the 11 p.m. exit time, to signal that nothing will stop us defending the values we hold so dear. The group joined others around the country to shine a light, symbolising the freedoms and protections we fight for and for our pledge to unlock our future from Brexit's toxic legacy. Event organiser Jill Thirkelson said, "In leaving the EU, I believe the loss to this country is incalculable. For 47 years we have built up trust between us and tolerance and respect for each other's rich and diverse cultures. Each country has much to give and this country has been made all the richer for it. We have learnt lessons from each other, and as a result, there is harmony between us instead of a prior, somewhat combative relationship. We have benefited greatly." And there's a photograph of them all. Very, very varied group of people, but obviously with their blue flags with gold stars. They've even got sweaters with the European Union star design, hats with the blue and the gold stars, and all are holding lanterns.
Volunteers help plant hundreds of trees. Green-fingered volunteers have planted hundreds of new trees as part of Winchester City Council's pledge to improve the environment and to tackle climate emergency. Armed with spades, forks and shovels, more than 20 volunteers gathered at Newlands Walk Open Space near Waterlooville for a community tree planting event. A total of 342 trees were planted over 2 days, Friday, January the 31st to Saturday, February the 1st, included 42 new trees and 300 infant trees. The new trees include a range of varieties such as oak, sweet chestnut, birch and hornbeam. The volunteers included local residents, members of Winchester Action on Climate Change, Winchester University students and council staff. Local businesses also took time out to help plant the trees with staff from IBM, Winchester's BID, HSBC and other local organisations rolling up their sleeves to take part. Winchester City Council has pledged to plant hundreds more trees across the district as part of its carbon neutrality action plan. Trees provide many environmental benefits and absorb carbon emissions as they grow. Deputy Council Leader Neil Cutler, Ward Member for the Southwark and Wickham, joined the volunteers. He said it's great to see so much enthusiasm to help the Council's tree planting commitment to take root. "These beautiful new trees are a wonderful new addition to Waterlooville, helping to improve the environment now and for future generations. A massive thank you to all the volunteers from the local community," WinAC said, "and businesses for getting stuck in." Paul Warden from Waterlooville and his 12-year-old daughter Siobhan were among the volunteers who attended on Saturday. Siobhan said, "I came along because I'm passionate about trying to save the planet. I think what the council is doing is a good thing and I really enjoyed it. I would definitely take part again. Paul said, I have never done this before, but it's been great fun and the fresh air and with the sun out, I'm looking forward to seeing the trees grow now. Jock McDonald, chairman of WinAC, said, we are delighted to be sponsoring the planting of 300 young trees by the City Council. Money donated to our charity via the Love Miles levy has enabled us to sponsor such a high number, and the scheme is still open should anyone wish to donate in the future. We hope that this first tree planting for climate change in the Winchester district will be the start of a rise of positive action to combat climate change locally. And there are a number of pictures. And what actually surprised me is that a lot of the trees are, you know, quite well established. They were quite tall. They look about 4 or 5 feet tall. And there are pictures of them coming with the vital ingredient, good soil, and a picture of young Siobhan and her dad planting one of these more mature trees.
Pub trade boost after decline. More pubs have been opening their doors to customers in Winchester, figures reveal, following a long-term decline in trade. Industry bodies have cautiously welcomed the first rise in the number of premises across the UK for over a decade, but have called for tax breaks to ensure the survival of the Great British Pub. Office for National Statistics data shows that pumps were pouring at around 120 public houses in the Winchester district in 2019, an estimated 5 more than the previous year. But this was still fewer than the 145 boozers open in 2007. The introduction of the smoking ban in the same year, the impact of the Great Recession and a rise in alcohol duty in 2008 have all been blamed for landlords calling last orders since. Across the UK, a 1% increase in the number of establishments last year to over 39,000 was the first increase since 2007. When the figure stood at 51,000. The number of small pubs, those with fewer than 10 employees, also rose for the first time since 2002. National Chairman of the Campaign for Real Ale, CAMRA, Nick Antona, cautiously welcomed the fact that pubs, especially smaller ones, appear to be bouncing back after years of closures. Unfortunately, pubs continue to close throughout the country, particularly in small or rural communities, he said. This means the loss of social, cultural and economic benefits that come with a well-run local. CAMRA is calling on the government to review business rates and lower the tax rate on beer sold in pubs. Mr. Antona added, we urge that these tasks are reflected in the forthcoming budget to help save the Great British Pub. The British Beer and Pub Association agreed, saying that policymakers have a great opportunity in the March budget to help pubs flourish. While the number of locals across the UK has dropped in the long term, there are more employees working in pubs on average than a decade ago. In Winchester, a similar trend has been seen, with the average pub employing 12 staff in 2019, up from 8 in 2007. A Treasury spokesman said, small pubs and bars are part of the heart and soul of our communities, so it is great news they are on the rise. We are committed to giving them support, which is why we will be cutting their bills in half through the usual business rates retail discount, plus further support with the new pubs relief.
Farmer did not want to move after selling land. A farmer who felt like he was going to be wrenched from the farm that had been his life killed himself after selling it to developers in an inquest heard. Michael Baby was discovered hanging in one of their barns on Parker's Farm, Ronhams. The inquest in Winchester heard, around 10 years ago, the father of four sold 250 acres of land to developers. And from the sale, his friend of 55 years and confidant, Kerry McNamara, said Mr. Baby was receiving a substantial sum of money in instalments, adding it is more money than he could ever have hoped for. However, the 73-year-old was not sure what to spend it on and on one occasion Mr. Baby was walking round Rumsey with a five-figure sum in his back pocket, but could not find anything to buy. Later he found an interest in horse racing and was investing in horses. But Mr. McNamara said when he came back to the farm, the same old issues hadn't gone away. He didn't know what to do with the money. Following his death, notes were found stretching back 2 years. P.C. Matthew Williams said he was struggling, couldn't quite wrap his head around the finances that were coming through. He was trying to plan the expenditure that was going out as well. Recording a conclusion of suicide, Mr. Pegg said he, Mr. Baby, says the whole farm business had caused him bother, not so much financially, but emotionally. And there's a beautiful photograph of him looking down at a large black and white cow lying on the ground looking peaceful in a very sort of bosky wood, everything very green, the grass and the beech trees above, smiling at his cow.
Failings in care at home, say CQC. A Winchester care home failed to ensure people's safety and meet individual needs of the residents, an inspection by the care watchdog has found. Berwick Court Care Home was home to 30 residents when the Care Quality Commission made an unannounced visit in November last year. The body rated the facility as requires improvement overall and for each of its inspection areas, including safety, effectiveness, responsiveness, and whether the home was caring and well led. The care home provides nursing and residential dementia care for up to 50 people, but the inspector said that in their report that there were insufficient numbers of experienced staff deployed at all times to ensure people's safety. It continued, staff had not undertaken all the training they needed to keep their skills and knowledge up to date. Care plans did not consistently cover all the required areas or contain an appropriate level of detail to support staff to deliver effective care or to meet identified needs. Over the course of their visit, inspectors observed a number of failures in care, including two people eating meals in positions that increased the risk of choking, and a number of mattresses which were being used to prevent skin damage and were not being set correctly. People were also not being provided with sufficient opportunities to take part in meaningful activities, with a very limited programme of planned activities. These were all deemed as breaches by the CQC, with the home required to take action. During their visits, inspectors also witnessed that care was often given with little interaction between staff members and residents. A spokesperson for the home said, "The health and safety and well-being of our residents is our number one priority, and we take all feedback from the Care Quality Commission very seriously. While we were heartened by the CQC's finding that our staff were kind and caring and that residents are treated with respect, we acknowledge that there are areas for improvement. We have a comprehensive action plan in place, and this implementation is being overseen by our senior regional team and an experienced turnaround manager. Additionally, our learning and development team is supporting colleagues to make sure that they have completed our bespoke and comprehensive training program. We are pleased that we have already made positive progress at the home, including reducing the numbers of agency staff we use. We have also updated the care plans for all residents to ensure that we can deliver high-quality, kind care to meet their needs."
Back to farming again. This is entitled Farming Today by Tom Bishop. Farmers are under a cloud across the world. Farmers who I met during my six-month study tour of New Zealand in 2018 have been glad not to have suffered the disastrous fires in neighbouring Australia, even if some have experienced the smoke plume overhead, writes Tom Bishop, associate partner at BCM Rural Property Specialists in Sutton Scotney. "It makes you realise here in Britain how lucky most of us are not to endure the same heat and fire conditions. If anything, the situation here has been the reverse. Too much rain has been seen the problem, and not just in the areas that made headlines. You don't have to travel far in southern Britain right now to see waterlogged land. Winter drilling was difficult, if not impossible, for many of us, and those of us who did manage to get into the fields now have crops sitting in wet and muddy conditions. The result will be a lot of farmers looking to get active with spring planting should their ground recover. Heavy equipment can cause too much damage through soil compaction, and particularly on marginal land, it might be better to leave it fallow and take the annual subsidy, which will continue for the life of this Parliament. The UK Government's aim, outlined in the reintroduced and revised Agriculture Bill, of rewarding farmers who provide a public good in the form of better environment and greener countryside, will get widespread support, including from many farmers. We are more focused on improving the landscape and natural variety of our flora and fauna than many lay people appreciate. It is, after all, our office, and who wants to work in the miserable surroundings? While arable farmers struggled with the weather, livestock farmers may have been having a better time of it. Livestock is often housed indoors at this time of year to preserve the condition of pastures, and pig farmers in particular have been seeing better export demand. An interesting aspect of the Agriculture Bill is that it holds hope of a degree of tenancy reform, and quite how this plays out will be determined in the coming months. But a change to the age at which farmers can retire and pass on their tenancy to the next generation is one target, lowering the present limit of 65 years old. At the same time, the bill also confirms plans to de-link direct payments from the requirement to farm the land, regardless of whether the recipient chooses to continue farming or not. De-linked payments could be used in several ways. Investing to improve productivity is one option, while diversifying could be another, as would be retiring from farming altogether. DEFRA is hopeful that this could bring more opportunities for new entrants, as well as assisting existing farmers wishing to expand or to buy or rent land. Farmers may also get the option of a one-off lump sum in place of any further direct payments, but there will be further consultation on this. Using this money to fund moving off the farm and opening the door to the next generation could become a distinct possibility, a big aid to those in families not farming land they own but who wish to take over the holding. There's more to this farming business than standing by a field gate sucking on a piece of straw while waiting to see if the red sky arrives at dusk or dawn. This new bill promises some of the biggest changes in 50 years, and I'm keen to see where it takes us, maybe alongside new, youngish colleagues. You are officially a young farmer until you reach 40, and I'm a big supporter of that.
Plethora of events at Watercress Line. The Watercress Line has announced its 2020 events programme featuring annual family favourites, behind-the-scenes tours and a jam-packed steam gala. Kicking off the family event programme on February the 14th to March the 8th is the world-famous Flying Scotsman, giving the perfect opportunity for fans of all ages to see her up close. Closely followed on April the 10th by the world's favourite little blue tank engine, as he once again chuffs into town for 10 days during its 75th anniversary year for the Heritage Railway's hugely popular Day Out with Thomas event. From April the 10th to the 19th and August the 8th to the 16th, visitors will have the chance to meet Thomas and his friends, shake hands with the Fat Controller and enjoy unlimited trips behind the famous engine, as well as unlimited rides on the railway's large locomotives, Thomas-themed activities and entertainments by Rusty and Dusty. Budding witches and wizards are encouraged to put on their cloaks and pick up their broomsticks for a day of magic and mischief when Wizard Weekend returns for an extended period on October the 25th to the 30th and 31st and November the 1st, featuring a plethora of performances and activities. Adding some festive cheer to its event programme is the Watercress Line's family-friendly Santa Specials from 28th to 29th November and on various dates throughout December. Jules Johns, marketing manager, said, from the iconic Flying Scotsman and family favourites to behind-the-scenes tours to our standard travel experience and activities for visitors, there's something for everyone to enjoy at the Watercress Line in 2020, and there's a wonderful big photograph of Thomas's starry eyes and smiley face and his blue engine and the red buffer plate. And we even have the fat controller in his top hat and yellow waistcoat and Rusty and Dusty, the stokers.
Revamp plan. Church leaders are unveiling plans for the refurbishment of St Mark's Church and Community Centre in Oliver's Battery. The churches of St Luke's, Stanmore and St Mark's Oliver's Battery are launching their refurbishment project for St Mark's Church and Community Centre on Monday, February the 10th. It will be held in St Mark's Church, Oliver's Battery Road, South, with presentations at 2pm and 8pm. The church says they want to share the plans and visions with the whole of the parish and welcome people's views and support.
Chance to take over City Cafe. Local businesses and entrepreneurs are now being given the opportunity to make rental and lease offers for 1871 Cafe. Last month, the Chronicle reported that the Winchester City Council was cutting ties with the operation after a fall in customers and a drop in profits, and now people are being given the chance to turn it around. Occupying part of the ground floor of the Guildhall, 1871 Cafe provides a contemporary open-plan layout, including a large, fully fitted kitchen and outdoor seating areas. As landlord of the site, Winchester City Council has agreed to open up the unit to external operators with the aim to have a new lease available from spring 2020. Interested parties have until February the 10th to submit offers. Chas Bradfield, Strategic Director, said this is a unique opportunity to locate in the heart of Winchester's historic centre. We know this is a well-loved site that many local people use and appreciate. As a council, we are committed to reducing carbon emissions in line with ambitious targets and maintaining a vibrant city centre for our community. We encourage interested parties to consider how their business will support these environmental and social priorities. Savills is handling the lease opportunity on behalf of Winchester City Council.
Sheep attack suspect is released by police. A Winchester man arrested over the deaths of six sheep in the New Forest has been released pending further inquiries. The 41-year-old was detained on suspicion of six counts of criminal damage following a spate of incidents in the Bramshaw and Cadnam area. Officers said the arrest related to the deaths of sheep in Pen Common Road, Bramshaw, and Wittensford Lane and Culake Lane in Cadnam. Police confirmed the man had been released but said he remained under investigation. The deaths began last November when a ewe was found stabbed at Pen Common and marked with pentagrams, a five-pointed star often associated with occultism. In other incidents, a cow grazing in Bramshaw returned with a wound on its neck, and two calves at Linwood suffered minor injuries to their shoulders. Police launched extra patrols amid fears that members of a satanic-style cult were active in the area. On January the 2nd, a sheep was stabbed to death near a pond at Culake Lane. A broken pitchfork and a cross made of straw were found beside the body. Villagers said the animal appeared to have been dragged into the middle of the road. Another sheep was killed in the Wittensford Lane area between 5pm on January the 16th and 8am the next day. On the same night, a sheep died in Pen Common Road after suffering what the police described as puncture wounds to its neck. The body of a sheep was found in Wittensford Lane, and there is a photograph of a dead sheep with these sprayed pentagrams on its head.
Youth action coming on the South Downs. Protecting Nature is free conservation events returning with extended lineup for the South Downs National Park's 10th birthday. Youth Action Days return for 2020 with an extended calendar of events to give young people the opportunity to get hands-on in conservation. Following the success of the events last year and to mark the National Park's 10th anniversary, Youth Action Days will be back during the February half term, as well as further events during the Easter and summer holidays. For the first time, there will also be a week-long series of action days related to helping to protect and enhance the National Park's 41 heaths, which are habitat rarer than the rainforest. South Downs Youth Action Days are for anyone aged between 16 and 25 who is passionate about making a difference for the environment and is looking to learn practical skills to conserve and enhance the South Downs National Park. Daniel Greenwood, Volunteering Development Officer for the South Downs National Park, said, "With the global climate change and biodiversity crisis so high on the agenda, we know that young people are incredibly engaged with the environmental issues. These free events are both fun and educational and give people a chance to get involved with a range of conservation activities happening in the South Downs National Park. It's also a great opportunity for young people to upskill, particularly if they are keen on the career in conservation or perhaps just want to become a more regular volunteer. Nature needs your help, and Youth Action Days are a great place to start. Details of events during Easter and summer will be announced later in the year. The Youth Action Days focus on heathlands are set to take place during July, and details will be announced later. And there is a picture of Plague Pits Valley at St Catherine's Hill, and it's of a sloping green hill with bushes on it, with rather a stormy sky behind it, and gates leading through onto the heathland.
Firefighter to help rebuild after Australian wildfires. A Winchester firefighter will fly to Australia to provide humanitarian aid after wildfires have ravaged the country. Steve Waters from Winchester Station will join 40 other firefighters deployed to Canberra, where a state of emergency has recently been declared. The Australian Capital Territory, ACT, has declared a state of emergency as large bushfires continue to rage in Canberra. More than 18,500 hectares is burning in the territory's south, and residents have been warned of possible evacuations. In the past 4 months, the bushfires have killed 33 people and destroyed thousands of homes. More than 11 million hectares of land have been scorched, and a billion animals are estimated to have died. The team of current and retired firefighters will be working closely with Fire and Rescue New South Wales Limit, NSW. Whilst they won't be doing any actual firefighting, they will be assisting with the re-establishment borders and restoring farms and homes. Steve will help rebuilding the farming communities by constructing fences, buildings and animal shelters. They will also be working with Blaze Aid, RSPCA Australia and WIRES, that's Australia's largest wildlife rehabilitation charity, to rescue, recover and provide welfare to injured koalas and kangaroos. The group intend to spend time with and embed themselves into the Aboriginal and Indigenous communities to share learning, knowledge and practices about the land and bushfires. This will encompass a vital part of the deployment for coordinating relief efforts and applying the learning internationally. The 51-year-old said, "I'm doing this because it's an amazing development opportunity that is close to home for me. I have family living in Australia and have seen the devastation and how hard communities have been hit. This is a chance for me to give something back and to help people in need. I'm sure this will be an experience that will stay with me forever. Every little bit helps, and I've always believed that if you can help, you should. The more people that join and come together as a team, the sooner these communities can get back to their normal lives." Steve has been part of the fire service for nearly 25 years, serving as a firefighter at Eastleigh, Andover, and now Winchester.
Crown courtrooms are standing empty, say lawyers. Another heading, idle courts threatening justice. Barristers have warned that victims are being denied justice as Crown Courts sit idle due to cuts imposed by the government. They say trials are being abandoned, cases delayed, and judges are overloaded with work because there are fewer sitting days, the number of days a year courts are allowed to open. It means courtrooms can be left empty while work piles up in adjacent courts, leaving victims, their families and the accused waiting for up to 2 years for justice to be delivered. Barristers said the problems are worse at smaller court centres such as Gloucester, where only one or two judges may be sitting, ahead of larger venues like Bristol and Winchester. Even at Winchester, one of the main courts, number one, was unused for at least 2 days last week. Kate Brunner, QC, leader of the Western Circuit, which includes Winchester, compiled the report. "This doesn't look like justice," is the heading of the report, assisted by junior barristers Anne Midgley and Holly Rust. The report warns trials are taking longer as judges juggle the other hearings, adjournments are at a record high, and cases can also be transferred to a Crown Court Centre 100 miles away at short notice. Miss Brunner said, "The issues identified in this study are not unique to the Western Circuit. Across the country, courtrooms are closed. What is happening in our Crown Courts today does not look like justice. Chaotic scenes are being played out of delays, last-minute adjournments and interruptions. The toll this is taking on witnesses, professionals, judges and others is being ignored." Amanda Pinto, QC, chairman of the Bar Council, said, "This significant report exposes the real-life consequences of closed courtrooms and cuts to judges' sitting days. This is a national issue which is fast becoming a national crisis. Currently, crime is rising, but courts are sitting empty. We are seeing an increasing time gap from the offence allegedly being committed to the end of the court case. The many months of delay and the false starts in hearing cases are undermining effective access to justice for all those caught up in the criminal courts."
Party seeks new blood to fight election. Winchester Conservatives are seeking new blood to fight in this May's city council elections. Excuse me. The association is able to field a full quota in the election, but since the extension of the Conservative parliamentary seats into the Midlands and the North, it has decided the party in Winchester district needs to reflect the Boris bounce and is hoping to attract people from all walks of life. Local association chairman Jonathan Leggett said, "There has been so much excitement about the general election win and how the party has moved away from its traditional support and into uncharted territory in some ways. To reflect this, we've decided we want to look out into Winchester District and ask if there are people out there who have not thought of standing for election as a Conservative but share our values. The association is looking for anyone 18 or over living in the city council area who can demonstrate a track record of community action or volunteering while holding conservative values. The party is also looking for the business people or those with strong environmental background as it embraces the green agenda. Anyone interested should email office@winchesterconservatives.org.uk or telephone on 01962 679910. That's 01962 679910, to request an application form.
County Council lays out budget. Multi-million pound investments are set to boost Hampshire's economy over the next years, but council tax is to increase. Hampshire County Council is planning to invest a total of £386.5 million in roads, transport and children and adult social care services over the next 3 years. The news comes as the authority has revealed its budget for 2021 and the proposed investment until 2023. According to the proposals for the 2021 budget, there would be a total of 3.99% increase in the County Council's council tax precept, of which 2% would be specifically for adults' social care. The proposed increase will see the council tax for Band D property increase by 49.41 pence per annum to £1,286.28. The total income from council tax in 2021 is expected to be just over £668 million, a document revealed. This represents 84.3% of the total funding of the county council's net budget. As part of the 2021 budget, the county council is also proposing to invest up to £2 million to tackle climate change and an extra £3 million to maintain roads. A total of £481 million would be invested in adult social care and health services, while an extra £22 million would be invested in children's services. The authority is anticipating the cost of running adult social care services in 2020-21 to be around £400 million, and the cost of running schools to be around £900 million. As regards the investment for the next 3 years, civic chiefs are also planning to invest £94.8 million for new and extended school buildings in Hampshire, £115.8 million for structural maintenance and improvement of roads and bridges, and £107.7 million for major improvement of schools and county council buildings.
Volunteers needed for night shelter. Volunteers are needed in a variety of different roles at Winchester Church's night shelter. The night shelter provides a temporary home, food, support, computer training, counselling, advice and advocacy for housing needs and contacts to substance misuse services to those who need them. The home is seeking evening helpers to assist the duty supervisor ensure the welfare of guests to the evenings between 6 p.m. and 9 p.m. Overnight volunteers are also wanted to provide vital backup support by being present on site overnight. At least 6 hours are for you to sleep in a comfortable private room. Hours for the volunteering role are between 9 p.m. and 8 a.m. And for those that enjoy cooking, evening cooks are needed to either heat up or prepare the evening meal and serve it to guests from 6:30 to 9 p.m. At the night shelter, guests also love home-cooked meals, but it can be a struggle to provide home-cooked food every evening, so home-cooking volunteers are also being sought. Volunteers would cook a meal at home and bring it in to freeze. You don't need any prior experience of working in a night shelter. Minimum age to volunteer is 18.
Labyrinths took centre stage. Winchester Cathedral hosted a groundbreaking multidimensional community art installation inspired by the theme of pilgrimage and coffee. Pilgrim Grounds saw the creation of a giant labyrinth in the nave from used coffee grounds and other coffee-related sustainable materials. People of any age and ability participated in making an individual art tile. As the labyrinth developed over 7 days and reached completion, visitors were invited to come back and see what had been created. It is estimated that over 1,000 tiles were required to create the labyrinth. Finally, on Wednesday, January the 29th, all were invited to gather for a labyrinth experience to celebrate its completion, to walk through the coffee art tiles which make up the labyrinth and spot their own. There was a performance poetry created from collected words from coffee conversations. Artistic director of the project, Jill Sacchettini, said, "This was an engaging collaboration where everyone made their mark at the start of the year of pilgrimage by participating both in making and mindful walking of this giant labyrinth." The very Reverend Catherine Ogle, Dean of Winchester, added, "I was excited by the scope of Jill Sacchettini's ambition to lead a community arts project in the cathedral that combined art, music, spirituality and coffee." And there is a picture of the labyrinth. It looks very interesting.
A meeting at City Guildhall. An international medical conference will be held at the Winchester Guildhall on June the 12th to 13th with seven top world experts in the early diagnosis of skin cancer. Professors from Austria, Italy, France, Turkey, Brazil, Poland and Australia will be teaching. The conference has already attracted bookings from over 150 consultants, GPs, nurses and podiatrists from around the UK and overseas, including Holland, Sweden, Germany, France, Romania and Ireland. Course organiser, Southampton NHS Dr. Stephen Hayes, is a board member of the International Dermoscopy Society, a worldwide group which promotes dermoscopy, using handheld skin microscopes to diagnose skin lesions. Dr. Hayes said, "I have seen how effective this technique is for reassuring people who are worried about funny-looking but harmless moles and picking up very early skin cancers before they can spread. Melanoma skin cancer kills around 2,500 people a year in Britain and is more common in the south and southwest. It is on the increase, but is cured if caught early." One of the guest speakers is Professor Cliff Rosendahl from Brisbane. He will show delegates how early melanomas are detected and cured by skilled GPs in Australia. Other eminent guests include Professor Giuseppe Argenziano from Naples and Professor Harold Kittler from Vienna.
Yeah, that concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors, Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. And thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And of course, thanks to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Norma York.
Goodbye.
And John Parvin.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye and do have an enjoyable week. And when you've finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.